and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 622.
That is right. Tonight, we are talking finally about Absolute Green Lantern number 7. I say finally because we've been purposely kicking this can down the road. And we'll get into that in just a second. But in the meantime, our writer is Al Ewing. Our penciler is Jason Howard. Our inker is Riley Rossimo. Our colorist is Inake Azipi. I can't possibly say that one. I'm sorry. Letterers, Lucas Gattoni. And then our editors, Ash Padilla, Andrew Marino, and Katie Kubert. This is such a bad issue. I am just going to straight up read the synopsis as said on DCFandom.com or DC.Fandom.com. We usually do our own, but I'm not doing this for this particular issue, and we'll get to why.
Which didn't even name drop the character reveal at the end, that synopsis.
Yeah.
So that even the synopsis has a major flaw in it.
Which is part of the reason we do our own, guys. But anyway. Mogo and a fleet of Black Star ships surround the planet J586. Mogo tells the people that they have trespassed against the law of Kard by not surrendering the three Owens, Green Lanterns in this universe, which they have detected on the planet. A leader of J586 protests that they have been trying to find the subversives, but it's impossible to locate three people on a planet of 7 billion. Mogo disregards the excuse, saying that the sin of one is the sin of all. And these three Avengers then fly up from the planet to oppose the Black Star fleet, these three lanterns being this universe's Aresia, Metaphil, and Karina Vent, which we'll circle around to later. In response to the Black Stars release one of their black hands to deal with him, the ferocious Kilowog of this universe. Kurina flies to intercept Kilowog, and he kills her instantly, crushing her head in his hand. The other two try to flank Kilowog, and he extends his fingers at Metaphil, who turns intangible. However, Kilowog is able to match Metaphil's density, slicing off his arm and head. Aresia blasts Kilowog with her full power, obliterating his head. She sends out a call to the other Owens and says that she's removing the lantern from J586, but to her shock, the headless Kilowog...
The Black Lantern. Yes. I may not say it in the synopsis, I'm just...
Yeah. The headless Kilowog reaches out for her. Meanwhile, Mogo destroys the planet and kills everybody on it. On Kilowog's ship, two other Black Stars confirm the destruction of the Green Lantern and tell Kilowog, whose head is almost fully regenerated, to return. However, before he can, a ball of red light flies in and smashes through the ship, destroying it. It then loops back around and hits Kilowog, sending him crashing into a chunk of floating debris. The sphere disperses to reveal Tomar Rey, an enemy of the Black Stars inside. Tomar Rey explains to Kilowog that the red light is intended to be used only for defense, but Rey was not chosen to wield it. He stole it, and as such does not restrain himself like a true Ayan or Ibn Rao would. He forms a construct of a cube around Kilowog and shrinks it to crush him beyond the ability of the Black Hand to heal him. Tomare orders the box to return to Mogo and the Black Star's leader and then flies away. The box flies down to Mogo's surface and into a fortress where the Black Star's leader, the controller of Mu, is busy dictating his philosophy. He sees the cube and realizes that Tomare is trying to distract him from the green anomaly he has already sensed elsewhere in the universe. The controller is revealed to possess the golden power of R, which the Black Star see as the lowest level of the spectrum of light. The Owens believe that the highest anyone can rise is initiate of R, and so the controller considers himself the only Abin R. The controller Mu here is this universe's Sinestro. And if that story was the one that was told to us point blank, it might have been more palatable. But it wasn't, because we had to interpret that that's all that happened. Because we were trying to be busy. We were busy trying to decipher all of the speak in this throughout the entire issue. Nothing is said straight out.
Yeah. And I'm not sure if this Mu thing is a purposeful play on some of the stuff Morrison did, using that, because he did use that term too. Mu being the controller. I don't know. Speaking of, this is like Timu Grant Morrison, this book, the way this book is written. It's like, I think Al Ewing thinks he's being smart and thinks he's being deep and thinks he's being clever. But all he's literally doing is throwing 1,000 terms at you, that some of which we have heard before, but in such rarity and such poor, and most of which have been poorly explained to begin with. But you're getting terms thrown at you over and over and over and over again. It seems like he's also has a little bit of Ryan Johnson in him, that he needs to subvert expectations, so he has to keep turning these things on their heads. So, you know, Kilowog's got to be this Black Star, and you got to have Tomar, who in a way is acting like he should be a Blue Lantern, but he's using red power, but yet, you know, he took the power himself, so maybe he's got a little Lord Flees in him too. And none of this really makes a damn lick of sense, and I said this to Chad when I reread this. I read this painfully the first time when it first came out, and then was perfectly content not to have to read it again until we had no choice, which was probably about an hour ago. This may very well be the worst written comic book I've ever read. It is painful to read this because it's so difficult. I mean, this reminds me of, like we mentioned on the show, I think some time ago, when one of the Dune movies came out, the new ones, that this reminds me of when the original Dune movie came out, and they literally gave you the cheat sheet. They handed you a piece of paper with all these terms and names and concepts to explain it, because if you had never read the book, they kind of figured, yeah, the odds are you're going to be completely lost with all the shit being thrown at you in this movie, so you better have a cheat sheet, so at least you can attempt to look at it in the dark, which is kind of the problem with the cheat sheet, because unless you're a speed reader, it's not like you can memorize it before the movie started. But it's like you need a Cliff's Notes next to you to try to understand this, even if you give a shit, which is another thing, because I honestly don't. But it's all the stuff, it takes 7 issues to have Sinestro being as the bad guy who's on Mogo, you know, making Mogo bad, making Kilowog bad. I'm kind of surprised in a way they made Tomar good. I'm surprised they didn't make someone like Larfleeze or somebody. Well, you can't have Black Hand unless you were going to actually use the character name, not his villain name. I don't know. This is just a steaming pile. It really is. It's really, really bad and difficult to read. I mean, I guess the artwork's okay. I guess if you have to give something, I guess that's a plus. And it also continues another annoying habit Ewing has, which is he likes leaving off on pseudo cliffhangers, in which everybody expects next issue you're going to pick up on what happened at the end of last issue, or at least even if the majority of the issue doesn't focus on it, somewhere in the issue you're going to revisit that last page. But no, this is like at least the second time that we thought they were going to pick up on something related to Joe. I think last time it was Joe and Hal, and this time it's Joe and her ex-wife, fiance, whatever, which, you know, I don't really care about either. But the point is, that's where we clearly thought this issue was going to go based on how the last issue left, and they're not even in this book. Nobody basically we've seen before is in this book, this issue. So it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. The comparisons to Morrison, for sure, are there. And I told Mark this, and based on his synopsis just now and what he feels about this particular issue, it's safe to say apparently he agrees. I'm done covering this issue by issue. I had my health issues during the pandemic or whatever, but for the time that I was here, I forced myself through the Morrison stuff and doing those issue reviews because it was there. We had to do it. We did it, whatever. I'm not doing that again. I'm done. I'm done forcing myself to do something that I am not looking forward to when I'm pissed at the material for A, B, C, D, whatever reason. And it was absolute had me for a little bit because they were doing some good work and there were some interesting concepts at play, and the cryptic universal doublespeak was, you know, not as prevalent. And then we were given that final issue or two where it was much more prevalent than it had been, but you were sort of getting the dictionary explanation of what these terms were supposed to mean in that issue, and you were sort of answering some of the questions that the series had set up thus far. So we were getting answers, and then we were getting information. We were, you know, reaching understanding, whatever the hell. Then you give us this issue where none of our touch points exist, and half of the terms we were just given a dictionary for don't make sense in context with some of the other terms we're introduced to. We're introduced to new characters, and we're introduced to new interactions and all of this, and it's one thing to play with the idea that there are concepts and patterns of speech and ways of living out there in the universe that are different from your own and therefore wouldn't make much sense. You sort of have to develop an understanding for. That's what the ring does. It translates things, and sometimes the way they portray this in Green Lantern comics oftentimes is, you know, the ring can't translate a certain word because we as humans lack a concept or, you know, something like that. And some of the patterns of speech also, like, for instance, Metaphil's, one of the things that Metaphil first says, my sap slows to look upon Mogo. Like, that's a pattern of speech that Metaphil has had in other mediums because, you know, he's a plant-based species. So these sort of idioms that him and his species would have. But all of it still sort of makes a collective sense, whereas this is a lot of nonsense. And when you speak in nonsense to sort of portray the fact that there are these concepts that are foreign and alien and beyond us, you're not establishing other. You're putting up a barrier for me to understand the rest of the story you're trying to tell. You're putting a blocker between me and your plot and the point you're trying to make with telling the story and the characterizations and relationships that you're trying to build. You're not making it clever, and you're not making it fun, and you're not making it unique. You're making it hard. And I liken it back to Millennium, and I actually pulled up the digitals. Because in Millennium, and I pulled up issue 5 of Millennium, there, you know, the Guardian and the Zamaron, the two that are together, and they're bringing in the new Guardians in Millennium. And I'm not about to recap Millennium for everybody, but you get them saying things like, but just as two is all that one is not, so is four the reverse of three. The nature of nature is sequence, and the limitations of three cannot be the end. And then, you know, Ganthet or whatever the Guardian's name was. Next comes the number three. One becomes aware of two because of the relationship between them. But here's the deal with Millennium. You get this bullshit from the Zamaron and the Guardian, but in between their little speech patterns where they're giving, you know, sort of the secret to life to the new Guardians, they're giving you panels of interaction between characters or concepts or whatever that sort of illustrate whatever point we're supposed to understand the Guardian or the Zamaron is making. So they say something, and then something happens in the comic to help illustrate the point they just made. That doesn't happen here. It is just speak the entire time with no information that gives us any sort of reference point or way of understanding, which is ironic because the whole thing is supposedly about understanding, because Aresia says things like maintain correct action, Abins of the Green Level, existence has not ended yet, be ready, they're opening a cage craft. You know, he's an Abin card, a weaponer is killing is what they do, but he is chaotic. We are correct. We can be like, I can't play Decoder Ring to this series. And I want to be 100%. I've seen the sales for not just Absolute Green Lantern, but most Absolute books. And they're topping most sales charts, regardless of how we feel. And I understand if people out there find this, if this is your gateway into Green Lantern, if this is your shit, if you're loving this, wonderful. Fantastic. We do everything we can on this show to try and just, you know, talk about the concepts as often as we can to keep people apprised of what's going on in the current publication of this franchise. But we're also not going to put ourselves intentionally through stuff that pisses us off, which is just going to cause burnout faster. So if you love this, fantastic. I'd love for you to send in some feedback. Tell us why. I'm not saying defend why you like it. I'm just saying, if you like it, great. Tell us what you think, what you feel we're missing or whatever. I understand that this is selling well, but I'm done and I refuse to push myself further. Does that mean we're done reviewing this? No, it just means we're not going to do it issue by issue because I can't do it anymore.
I would be willing to bet the majority of people either who really like this book or and a large percentage of people who are buying this book and making it fall into the same pattern as the other Absolute books really aren't diehard Green Lantern fans. They're just people who either have liked the Absolute line or people who whatever have gotten into the initiative, or maybe even people who are more Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman fans. It's like, oh, we like this line and they're building towards something, so I would be stunned that the majority of diehard Green Lantern fans are enjoying this, especially because, like we talked about previously, It really does seem like Ewing basically had two hats, and in one hat there were Green Lantern names and terms, and then in the other hat there were concepts, and then he just literally took one from one hat and matched it one from whatever he pulled out of the second hat, and there's the connection. So this is what Abin Sur means, or this is what Oa means, and this is what Mogo means, and that's what it seems like, because it's all over the friggin' map. It's like, oh, gold is supposed to be this, and John Stewart appears to be gold, but then you have Sinistro, who is the leader of the Black Stars on Mogo, and yet he's gold, and it's like, oh, just stop. It's like, who the f*** cares? Honestly, that's the reality. Who the hell cares? And it's like, oh my god. And now we'll probably spend a huge chunk of next issue dealing with domestic issues between Joe and her ex-wife fiance. Like, who the f*** cares about that either? It's like, I don't know. It's just a mess. It's just a mess. And yeah, we will probably review it, but I gotta be honest with you. At this point, I wouldn't really care if we didn't. But it's certainly going down the road of like DC versus vampires and some of the other things. Not that I'm blaming you for this one. You're off the hook on this. But the reality is it's going down the road of one of those series where it's like, will these come back to do like a progress report? But there's no guarantee we're going to be dedicating real issues toward this anymore, or certainly not many, because it's just, it makes you miss Jeffrey Thorne. I guess it's perspective. It makes you miss all the crappy, all from a certain point of view that people have thought. I mean, you hated Morrison so much. I mean, I didn't love it, but you hated it so much more than I did. But the reality is, we go back and look at some of the things that have not made us happy ever since Geoff Johns left, and pretty much almost everybody's run in one Green Lantern book or another is still better than where this book has been going and more or less heading down this road all along. It's just maddening. It really is. It's maddening. I guess on the bright side, by default, Jeremy can let out some deep breaths because of the fact that his book will continually look much better by not by sales, of course, but from a quality perspective and from an enjoyability and accessibility perspective from Green Lantern fans, it's going to keep coming out looking much better. And wow, this isn't so bad when you put it next to the absolute mess.
Yeah, I get what the intent was behind this in terms of turning it into a horror story combined with sort of a first contact alien story where like concepts and ideas and ways in the same way that lots of people are like there can only be carbon based life forms in our universe. You're making an assumption based on your current understanding of what you think life is based on our planet and our experience. There could be other forms of life based on other types of matter. But the way in which to tell those stories where you're introduced to concepts that you're unfamiliar with and lack any real understanding of isn't just to barrel head first into the fucking muck and mire of this entire world and just get lost in the speak and the culture and everything. The way to tell a story like this is the way they did it in Green Lantern Earth 1. You took some of the key concepts and the core concepts, the root concepts of what makes Green Lantern a Green Lantern, and then you just turned a few items on its head. And I think Green Lantern Earth 1 was a fan, like there's some, I think I have some issues with it here and there, but I think the idea of playing with these concepts and doing a sort of first contact plus horror story is an interesting concept, but they're just running it into the ground.
Yeah, I would say that this issue absolutely 100% jumped the shark.
Yeah.
That this is kind of like the point of no return in the big picture. And we always say, well, there's a chance they can bring us back. Kind of like we talked about the Olgrin reveal. It's like, you weren't 100% willing to shovel dirt on the grave at that point. I was. But the point was, there's a slim chance, despite how horrible this moment was. Well, maybe. Probably not. Yeah, 9 out of 10 times when you have a moment like this, that's what it is. You jump the shark. You got the genie's out of the bottle. You can't put it back in. It would be virtually impossible to make a lemonade out of these lemons at this point, especially if you're going to be bombarded with these terms and over and over. I mean, it's like, first of all, there's too many of the damn terms. I mean, to begin with, and I don't know. I really hope this is not going to really be a true ongoing where there's no end in sight. I might actually light a candle to pray for the fact that this is something that will not be a true ongoing, that it may be a maxi at this point. It may go on 15 issues, might go on a little bit longer than maybe they originally planned theoretically, but let's just hope that this is not an ongoing book that we even have to think about dealing with even by like mid 2026. Let's just hope this book is already come and gone, because the sooner we flush this one, I'll be happy. I'll think and want to think more of Green Lantern Dark than I will of this.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with how this shaked out. To be honest with you, I had a lot of faith in Al Ewing. I had a lot of faith in the idea that they were just going to be playing with the concept. I was looking forward to reading a Green Lantern series where we didn't have to worry about continuity and what we know about the powers and the history and so on and so forth. The characters were just, these are new concepts. These are new, like, it's the same. It's the root is the same, but everything else is different. So you can't really judge it based on that. But it's a mess, and I can't, this is, I try to be as gracious as I can with certain creators, but I think at the end of the day, everybody at some point in their lives does bad work, no matter what you do. I do tech support for a living, right? I'm gonna have a great CSAT customer satisfaction rating through most of my tickets because I know what I'm talking about and I can speak clearly to the client or whatever. But I'm going to have a day where they piss me off, or I'm having a rough day, or where I don't say the right thing and I just do bad work. That's what happens. This is bad work. I think I have seen good Al Ewing, and now I have seen bad Al Ewing. And for me, this is bad Al Ewing. If you're still loving this, great, wonderful, fantastic, happy for you. The same way in which I can't fucking stand Simon, but if he's your favorite Lantern, I'm not going to say you're not a real Green Lantern fan or whatever because you like Simon as your favorite. Great. If you like anything Green Lantern, then wonderful. Welcome to the fandom. But I'm done with this. And Mark said, you know, we'll circle back to it. We'll give up. But whether we do an episode for every 2 issues or every 3 issues or every time an arc finishes, or whether we don't do a full episode at all dedicated to it, we just do a check-in, just or whatever, as a part of a segment of a larger episode or whatever. I'm not going to go through the what we did with the Morrison run, where I was dreading going into an episode or who's doing the recap or trying to find something to talk about other than just me being pissed about it, so it didn't sound like I was bitching and complaining the entire time and it made for a funner episode. I'm fine with putting effort into our content. We do that with like Famous First or Emerald Influence or the covers stuff that we do or anything else that we want to look into or whatever. But I'm not going to force myself anymore. And I have to admit, despite disliking some of the stuff that Jeremy has done and being upset with some of the stuff that just isn't making sense or stuff that I'm pissed at, to be honest, I have read worse and still reviewed it. It's been a long time since I've been Grant Morrison level pissed off, and I am not doing it again. And from Mark saying it's the worst issue he's ever read, it sounds like he's on board. So like, forgive me if you love it, but I can't do it.
And again, to give the devil his due here, this really shouldn't be compared with Grant Morrison, because Grant Morrison, at least you knew, put in a lot of work and a lot of effort, and he knew his shit, and if he didn't know it off the top of his head, he went back and he mined the material to try to find things that he could use. So Grant, that's why I said like Timu Grant Morrison, because this is like a poor, cheap knockoff Grant Morrison, or somebody who thinks, hey, I'm doing just the same thing that Grant did. It's like, no, you're not. Yes, there were things about Grant Morrison's run that were frustrating because, yes, you needed to have like an encyclopedic memory of all things Silver Age sometimes. And yes, the backwards talk garbage got old, which of course they obviously were consciously aware of, so they did in the final issue. They made sure they had that Quartian guy speak. They translated it for us, so we didn't have to hold the issue against a mirror up against it to know what he was saying. They think they realized, well, this is the last issue. We have to make it more user friendly. But at least he touched on some cool concepts. He revisited things, and that. So there's like no. The frustration level of reading something you don't like, or you're getting bombarded with stuff and you feel like, again, like I said, you need like a cliff notes or multiple cliff notes next to you so you can understand what's going on. There's an analogy or it's there to be made, but from a quality of a writing perspective and where you're attempting to go with this, there's just none, because again, this is the equivalent of similar. I'm not going to say it's a 100% equivalent, but like I mentioned earlier, this is similar to Ryan Johnson. It's like, hey, I have to subvert expectations, so I have to have Luke throw away the lightsaber, and I have to like take a leaf blower to every single trail of breadcrumbs that was set up in The Force Awakens, because that's what I do, even though that makes no sense when I'm doing the second part of a trilogy. Congratulations, I left you aimless for part 3. Congratulations. But this is kind of what this is. It's like, this is what this is like. It's like, let's connect concepts and characters to things that make no sense whatsoever. And other than maybe we can figure out who Al Ewing's favorite Green Lanterns might be, considering who's the one who's being portrayed favorably and who's not, or even that may not, that assumption might not even be true, because again, that might be, well, literally, maybe he did pull things out of a hat. I need somebody to be a bad one. So one of these three characters is going to be a Black Star. It's Kilowog. Okay, Kilowog could have had the Tomar role, but you know, maybe not that one, because Kilowog obviously makes a better bad guy from a size perspective. But who the hell knows? It's just a mess. And
yeah, I like seeing like Metaphil. I like seeing Aresia. I like seeing Kilowog. I like seeing Tomar. I like seeing this other lantern that they mentioned with her, Karina Vent, who is actually, she was introduced towards the end of the Tony Bedard core series. It was issue 61. So she's a real lantern. So like mining this universe and stuff and bringing back characters, hell, just using alien lanterns that at least with in name only we're familiar with. Wonderful. I'm not saying there aren't some cool things here or weren't some cool things and concepts before, or that there won't continue to be some things that, oh, that's maybe kind of interesting, but I'm not about to slog through it to find it.
Agreed.
So, but that's all I got for this. What else is next?
A couple of things about last, speaking of comics, about last issue of the, of Jeremy's run, related to the entities that I plan on talking about that we never kind of did, you know, related to the entities and them disappearing. You know, we did say about Jeremy brought back the entities to kill them, which is what it looks like. However, one thing I think Anas and I actually talked about this. The one thing we do have to kind of remember is the last time we saw all the entities involved in a story other than when Kyle was taking them over to refill the reservoir, what were they doing? Krona was gathering the entities. So we have to consider the possibility that the entities were brought back and now they've disappeared because maybe whatever Krona is doing, maybe he needs the entities again or wants the entities again, just because there is a relationship there. So that's one thing. That's a pot though. So they may not have truly been brought back just to kill them off indefinitely. They may be he may again want us to believe the reader to believe they're dead, like the Parallax thing, but he may actually have a plot reason why he wanted to bring them back and then have them supposedly look dead. Speaking of the Parallax thing, considering what they did with all this, that literally they brought the entities back and they just killed them all off, mostly off panel. And the only one we saw a body of was, you know, Parallax Jr. or maybe Timu Parallax. That I think it does reinforce the idea that somebody is doing a Parallax story coming down the road. Because if the idea was to just kill the entities off, so we don't have to deal with them anymore, or even the Krona thing that he wants to gather the entities, they could have used the real Parallax for that. They could have just had, like I said, Parallax show up once the entities came back into our universe. He could just sense his brothers and sisters and go join them, and then they all suffer the same fate on Desolate Stone anyway. The fact that they had to come up with a knockoff fear entity to kind of kill, have the only one that literally looks like he might really be dead, I think that reinforces that we are getting a Parallax story at some point, whether it's Jeremy's or whether it's not, that I think there was a reason why he was untouchable and they didn't want to have any confusion with him. But that's it. That's just residual stuff from our discussion on the end of the Starbreaker Supremacy.
All right. No worries. Has Mark seen?
Anything I saw yesterday, I saw Event Horizon, which was the first time I'd ever seen that in the theater. I enjoyed that movie. That was fun to see. Didn't have a great crowd, but again, it's a Tuesday night, so I wouldn't expect a particularly great crowd. So that is it. There are a few things I've seen on streaming I think I'll mention at some point. Some newer movies I never saw in the theater, but now that I've seen, including like The Substance and actually, the one you mentioned will be coming on, Weapons, will be coming on in a couple of days on HBO Max. So I'll finally actually get to watch that. But there's a few other things, too. But I think that's it for what I've seen.
All right. Sounds good. What's next?
Well, to try to have some positivity in this episode, which is funny as I'm saying it, because, man, that just really sucked the life out of me talking about that issue. We should be happier. But we wanted to do the epilogue or the part two discussion of the McFarlane Emerald Twilight cover recreation, since we've gotten our figures at this point. Actually, at least I think Chad's was around, but he didn't actually get it till the next day. But when we recorded the issue review for the end of the Starbreaker Supremacy, I had already gotten my first one of my two orders. Ironically, the second order shipped first, which is, just tells you all you need to know about life. The order I placed during the McFarlane live chat, that shipped via FedEx, so I got that on a Wednesday, and then 2 days later, the ones that I originally ordered during the 9/15 early launch fiasco, they arrived via USPS. So we both have custody of our, we have received our payload of Emerald Twilight figures, so we figured we would talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, it's a great figure.
It's much better in person than it is online, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. It's still so odd to me that I know it's just because, and this is what the cookie cutterness of the McFarlane stuff that gets old, that you would think they would have given some different accessories other than two other hands, because at the very least, if you're getting this figure, even if you didn't want to display it with the background, the real reason to get this figure, arguably, besides the recreation of the cover, is just by the cool fact that he's got like friggin' 13 rings on two hands. Why would you want to swap either one of those hands out?
Yeah, it's true.
And they give you, like we talked about, they give you the same energy fist constructs that come with all the lanterns, and they give you this translucent power battery. And I don't know, did you take yours out?
No, yeah. I only got one. I'm keeping it in the box for now.
Yeah, so like I mentioned to Chad, it may not be standard. This could have just been luck of the draw. That I know the peg, either the peg hole is too big, which is probably the case, on the bottom of the figure, because he does not want to stand very well in that base. It takes a lot of finagling to get the foot to stay without playing around with it, which obviously you could do. You could put something inside the opening in Hal's foot to make it to close the space, and it'd be a tighter squeeze. But just on its own, it makes it a little more difficult to get it to stand on it. Now, it's not when you get it positioned, you can hit the area where he's on, where he's, you know, wherever you have it, and it's not like he's going to tumble over. But that was the only negative from a displaying perspective. I do like the fact that the background, you have two options of displaying the figure with the cover behind it. You have the actual full Green Lantern cover because it's reversible. So on one side, you have the full Green Lantern 49 cover, so you can have Hal standing with the hands up with all the rings and have the full Daryl Banks cover. And then you can reverse it, which basically takes away the artwork and just has the top banner of Green Lantern 49 and the Emerald Twilight, and basically Hal, the figure, I guess, would conceptually take the place of the art of Hal drawn in the center of the cover. So you do have those options of how you want to display. So I think that part is cool. Plus the little cover recreation, the little mini cover recreation with the little description on the back is kind of appropriate too. I like that quite a bit.
Yeah, I think you have a bit of a point with the hands. I think that could have been fun to instead of the different hands for the ones that they have. Look, I'm of two minds about it. Like, one, you could have. If you're going to do the hands, the extra hands that you have here, as is, then you should have taken the effort to do the black shadowing on the hands to match the style of the figure. If not, you should have made an extra pair of hands with all of the rings in the exact same way, but without the black coloring to mimic the shadows, so that you could put the same hands on any other figures or lanterns you may have in your collection, so that other characters can do the ring pose.
Yeah, I would say yeah, the big, you have a point about the shading. I think the most egregious, if there's anything egregious in it, is the fact that the duplicate hands still don't have the rings. So they should have, if they wanted to give different poses, you know, different hand poses, then they could have made the effort to at least put all the rings on each respective hand. So that way, like you said, even if you don't want to do anything with these, you have two extra hands with all the rings, so you could swap them out with some other McFarlane figure and kind of have it do an homage to Green Lantern 49, even without the shading, or whether with the shading or without, just to have it. So it's like, cool, this is what this figure would look like. But yeah.
Yeah, there's not many lanterns, because I'm looking at all of mine. Alan, Jade, none of the Kyles, Dawnbreaker, Parallax. None of them have like extra hands, but the Guy Gardners do. The all three of them, the Red Lantern.
Yeah.
I have Red Lantern, by the way, now, everybody. I have Red, I have Regular Guy, and I have Warrior Guy. But those come with extra hands. So you could do a guy with the multi rings if they did that, bothered to do that with this. One thing I forgot to ask, maybe I'm being dense as hell here. Why does it say Emerald Twilight 2? What's with the 2 symbol everywhere?
Because it's issue 2.
Oh, okay. I didn't even think. Did the original cover have the 2 on front?
I believe so.
Why does that look so foreign to me? I don't understand.
But hold on. You know, this is funny. This will be an easy way, because I was talking to Jim about the display, because I showed him a picture of me having this on the, of me displaying the boxed figure I have of this next to the Green Lantern display, which of course now as we're speaking is literally taking forever to load, which is why I'm buying time. Oh my God.
Yeah, I'm taking my Emerald Twilight trade off the shelf.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it's there.
Yeah, it's there.
But it's, to be fair, it's really easy to overlook that because there's so much going on in that cover that that's hardly the most noticeable thing. But yeah, it is. Yeah,
the covers aren't in here. That's weird. Sorry, the Emerald Twilight trade doesn't have the covers in here.
That's right. You just, which one are you looking at? The Emerald Dawn one too? Well, not the Emerald Dawn, but the one with Kyle. The new era that comes.
Yeah, yeah. Emerald
one.
Twilight, New Dawn.
Yeah, like, yeah. I bet you the original one.
Copyright on this? Copyright 2003. So this is the 2003 edition.
Yeah, my original one would probably have the three covers. But either way, yeah, it does have. Looking at the display, it has number two inside the Green Lantern symbol on the upper right. So that's accurate. So that's the reason. That would be the reason why, since it's part two of Emerald Twilight.
The only thing I would change about this, if I could, like, especially if I was going to take it out of the box, is I would probably find a way that to do it cleanly. And I don't know that you could do it cleanly looking at the base plate, but to drill a hole and put an LED light, like a light source under it, because have you like turned on the flashlight on your phone and held it to the, well, if you're looking at the figure, the right side of Hal, like just put it down at Hal's feet and then turn on your flashlight and put it over to his right side as you're looking at him, because it looks so much better with the light. Like, I know the intent, the way it's designed and painted, is to mimic the shadow effect, but with an added light source to really emphasize it, it looks great like that.
Maybe you should try one of my tea light candles next to him.
Yeah, putting in some sort of a nice light source at the right point, like to mimic the way the light should be playing off of his face, it looks really cool.
Yeah, I would imagine that. I would imagine that it would. But
so one of the things that Mark told me, and I didn't realize it until I got mine, obviously, is that there's no peg for this. There's no like hook on top of the figure. No way to like pin him up on the wall. I'm not going to go into exactly which one you have to buy or whatever in terms of like saying we're going to put the link on our website or anything like that. But there is a company out there called Katana Collectibles that I use. And I discovered them when I needed a protector for my Bebop and Rocksteady 2-pack NECA figures that I got signed by the voice actors. I got it signed and then I was like, okay, this has to go in a protector. I can't ruin this box. I can't take these figures out. It's signed on the box. I really got to protect this thing. And I found that Katana Collectibles makes, these, you know, flimsy plastic protectors for that are custom designed in terms of they're specifically measured out to fit certain things. And Katana had done some for NECA figures, including the dimensions for the Bebop and Rocksteady. So I picked that up. And lo and behold, they also make these flimsy protectors for Funkos of various sizes, whether you get a regular one or an oversized one or one of the cover recreations or the album arts or whatever. They also do some for McFarlane figures and all different sizes. They're regular ones, the collector's editions. Here's the thing. This figure, the box itself, despite not having obviously the peg hook and everything in there, is the same dimensions as a McFarlane Collector's Edition figure. The one I use for comparison to figure this out is my Ragman figure, because I got three Ragmans. I got one to take out of the box that's in my display case. I got one that's up on a peg on the wall with the rest of my McFarlane figures. And then the third one is in the plastic display thing, because I hopefully, and you know, fingers crossed, I can get to some of the creators before, you know, they unfortunately pass away, because, you know, let's face it, a lot of these creators are getting up there. Hopefully I can get that figure signed by some of the creators of Ragman and I can have it, you know, stored in the same way I have those NECA figures. But regardless, if you take into the account the height of the figure, those regular McFarlane Collector's Edition figures, including the part that sticks up that goes on the peg. This figure, the Emerald Twilight figure, is the same height as those figures and the same width and thickness of those figures as well. So if you go and it's possible Katana may release a protective case that they say is specific for this one. But if you're looking for something that just fulfills the dimensions of that, if you go to Katana Collectibles and get the protector for the McFarlane Collector's Edition figures, it should fit this. And the reason I say this is because you have the choice when you buy these protectors of whether or not they actually come with a flimsy hook or a full hook or no hook at all. So if you want to display this on the wall in the case, you can just get this this protector that I'm referring to on Katana. Obviously, like, if you're really not worried about it, I'm sure you could like tape something to the back of the box and, you know, jury rig your own hook to put it up on the wall or put command strips or something. But if you're really worried about just protecting the integrity of the figure and the box as a whole, because let's face it, the box looks great too, because it's got the entire reprint of the cover all across the back. So I don't know that you'd want to put tape on it or risk tearing that off or whatever. Those Katana Collectibles protectors will do you pretty good on this, I think.
I use the Scotch, those reusable poster hanging squares.
Okay.
I put a few of those up to just hold it against the wall. I did that the first day, so that was I think that was before you posted your little explanation when you were hinting at what that you had a fix. So then I was kind of committed to giving it a shot and see how it was going to work, to see if it would last or whether it would fall out, because those things are designed to really not stick to the surface of anything so pretty easily. So if worst comes to worst, it just wouldn't last. It would fall off the wall, but it's not going to, but it shouldn't damage the box. But yeah, I did like those cases. I that is absolutely something I would consider.
Yeah, they're nice, and they make them for all kinds of stuff. Like, if you're the type of collector who likes to keep stuff in boxes, I would definitely recommend Katana Collectibles. Not sponsored, obviously, but KatanaCollectibles.com, because the fact that they make these little plastic protectors that are custom dimensions for so many different, like they make some that fit the Marvel Legends figures, they make some that fit the old school DC Comics Icons line before McFarlane got the license and stuff like that, those weird shaped ones. So they do pretty good job. Like they like old school figures that like are on like on cardboard, where you just sort of peel the plastic off the front of the cardboard. I don't know what you call those types of figures, but those cardstock type figures. They make protectors specifically for those types of things. So that if you're the type of person who likes to keep some things at the very least in box, I would highly recommend this, because I think also this plastic is supposed to be have some measure of UV protection on it as well. Just FYI.
Well, that's cool.
So if not, they I think it's an option that they sell. So I would definitely double check that. But yeah, Katana Collectibles, look them up. But yeah, this figure is great. I'm glad. I would have been pissed I didn't get it, for sure. No, not rubbing it in to anybody who went through that nightmare and ended up not being able to pick one up. But I definitely would have been pretty pissed off if I was among them.
No, I can absolutely understand that. And it did for those, because Jim asked me this question, because it was a borderline cliffhanger, at least for those that weren't paying attention. It probably honestly took like about at least another 4 days, if not 5 days, before the McFarlane figure sold out on their actual website. It was available. It was available for, if not the entire weekend, almost the entire weekend, if not. So it was there for a long time. So hopefully the majority of people who really wanted one, especially people who listen to us or follow Myron and places and read, you know, the Facebook page and things like that, at least got the hint. So they were able to do what needed to be done. But
for sure. And oh yeah, I got my Null in the mail the other day.
Oh, that's right. That is pretty neat.
Yeah, it looks cool. Just not much to say though. It's a Funko figure. The Funko figures are pretty much the same across the board. But it's a good interpretation of the Null. I'm glad I have it. So it's on the wall in front of me now. Which if I get, because I think I'm only missing maybe five from this collection, four or five. That I need to still get. Like, I didn't get a glow chase of the Doctor Doom, Venomized Doctor Doom. I have the regular. I don't have the glow chase. I think there's a couple other things I need to grab, too. The Venomized Ironheart, I think, is a glow chase that I need to get. There's a Mecha Venom I need to get and a few other things. But I need to either lower this shelf on the wall, like dismount it, fill in the holes in the wall and drop it down one, or figure out something else or a different shelf somewhere, because I'm going to be running out of space on the Venom wall. So I need to drop it down one row and make room for what, 10 more, or figure out something. I'm running out of space.
Time to move.
Yeah. I need an extra room, not for a person, but for collectibles.
Yeah. Can I knock down this wall so I can expand? No.
All right. We got anything else tonight?
No, I think unfortunately, Absolute kind of just, at least for me, sucked the life out of me. So
it comes with its own silver lining, though, because as we record this, guys, today, the newest issue of Green Lantern and the final issue of Green Lantern Dark just came out. So we will be wrapping up coverage of Green Lantern Dark because the series is ending. And then obviously with Absolute Green Lantern, in terms of how we're covering it moving forward, it won't be as consistent as it has been. So that only leaves us with Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps as regular issue coverage. So we're freeing ourselves up to do stuff we've been wanting to do for a while now. We can do more of the cover episodes. We can do some Emerald Influence. We can do some Famous First if we want to again. We can do whatever we want now. We can circle back and do some older issues if we feel like it. Who cares? We are opening up some of our schedule by making this change. Not that that's the reason we're doing it, but it's an unexpected side benefit of doing so.
Yeah, that is true. Plus, heaven forbid, we might actually have some... We should have some skip weeks. My God,
for sure. We are coming up on the holiday season.
I know. I think we're still on. I still don't think we've had a skip release week. We've had a skip recording week because I did the mini episode, but I don't think we've had an actual skip recording week. I don't think, which means sadly, I think we're still friggin' on pace for a disgustingly impressive like 50 episodes. So we definitely have to change that.
Well, my mom's in town for the next month or so.
And Jim and I are talking about it. Probably won't happen until sometime in November, but we are finally going to do a pre-birth. So we were talking about that today because for some reason my mind was thinking, I think because the McFarlane figures, people saying, hey, you know, just wait, these things might be available in the stores, which they may very well not be, considering these things that I noticed, I didn't pay attention to the FedEx one, but the ones that came USPS absolutely were shipped by McFarlane. So what it said on the website, the Walmart website, saying they were shipped and fulfilled from McFarlane was literal that they, it's not like Walmart still sent them out, but they got the stock from them. And no, my USPS box, certainly, but the last two figures came. They came directly from McFarland's warehouse. So it might be highly questionable if all these orders were really filled directly from McFarland, even the Walmart ones. It's probably really questionable whether these things are going to show up in the store. They could, but I don't think there's as much reason to hope for that. Plus, it's kind of blind hope anyway. It's kind of like me, not quite as bad, but kind of like me hoping that the Spectre Hal wasn't going to go for an insane amount of money because nobody likes the character. So it's kind of like hoping, like, well, they might be available. And even if they are, it doesn't mean you're going to see them because people will probably buy them just to sell them. People suck.
Yeah, there's still a few McFarlane figures that I want that I don't have. Like, I still don't have that Gold Label Dead Man. I still don't have Effigy. I still don't have Necron. I still don't have Yellow Lantern Sinestro.
I saw Necron. You know what? Maybe it was on Big Bad that somebody had Necron for a relatively decent price, and I was gonna show it to you, but I figured because most of the time you just say nah.
Well, most of the time I'm just paid for instance, I just dropped
I know
$700 on my stupid car.
It's 40% off on Big Bad Toy Store, so it's $25. So basically, it's about the same price as a standard McFarlane figure, and that's a deluxe.
I still need to get that Green Lantern collector's edition. But I want the Tomar Ray and Abin one.
Is that not the one you have?
No, I don't have either. I don't have either.
I thought you got. Yeah, I agree. I'm very happy I got the Tomar one, because I would not want the other one at all.
I also want the Question and Red Robin, because it's Tim Drake and I like Tim. But there's the one that's proven very hard to find is the Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern one, that's the McFarlane Toys Digital. The packaging looks a little bit different, but his suit matches what it is currently in the comic, or at least it was at the start of the Jeremy Adams run, where his suit looked like the Silver Age. It stopped at his collarbone. That's the Hal that I want from the entirety of the McFarlane line. Cause I, you know, like the, what did you call him? The most recent Hal with
the Liberace Hal. That's a hard God, that face sculpt is atrocious. When I did the first searches for the Emerald Twilight cover figure, right, the day like it dropped or whatever, they, besides some parallaxes showing up, they showed the Liberace face, and it's like, oh my god, I'm sorry, that is the most atrocious looking Hal Jordan I've ever seen.
Yeah, the best Hal Jordan though is this McFarlane Toys digital one, and it's expensive on the aftermarket, man.
There's a bunch of Effigies pretty dirt cheap.
Yeah, I'm on eBay.
So if you decide to pull the trigger, that there's.
I think it's Sinestro that's going to be hard. It's going to be the digital Hal, maybe the Tomar Ray Abin, and then maybe the Dead Man, just because it's a gold label. Gold labels just get bought up too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's
Yeah, the Necron was at my my local Target, and I was just waiting for it to go on sale. But man, Target takes forever to put anything on sale, and by the time it was already gone. There were two of them in the store, and I'm sorry, I didn't want to pay that much for a figure. It was just too much. But luckily I got my Kryptonite Doomsday on sale, but unfortunately Necron I didn't get a chance to pick up. So once I get some expendable income, I will, you know, start completing some of these collections before McFarlane officially loses the license, which is just by natural luck of the draw, is going to jack up the prices on all of these because they're quote unquote out of print or whatever.
It looks like the price for the Spectre Hals has dropped dramatically, since now they're only going for $500.
Good God.
I'm not kidding. Last time I did a search, some of these things were going for like $800 to $1,000.
Well, aren't they coming out with a new Spectre? And you're a customizer. Can't you turn them in?
Yeah, I think that Spectre might be even harder to make. Yeah. I'm lucky enough that I still have. Actually, I have two of the DC Direct Hal Jordan Spectre. So it's not like I don't have any of those. Now, yes, that was a knockoff because it just used the Hal Jordan figure they had at the time, which had an extraordinarily long face, which I didn't really appreciate. But when he's under the cloak and everything, it's not as noticeable. But yeah, that's actually that's about as cheap as I've seen it. Usually most of these they've gone closer to $1,000, which is nuts, because I'm sorry, you have to have a whole lot of disposable income to be spending $800 on a figure. It's just crazy. But that's probably the one McFarlane figure I would really, really, really like. One of the few figures right now that I like, a holy grail that I would like to get. Here it is right here. McFarlane DC Multiverse Platinum Spectre Build-A-Figure, $999. You got to be a moron. I think you got to be a moron to even charge that much to really think someone's going to pull a trigger on it, especially when it's not the cheapest one on the site. I mean, if that was the only one on eBay, then all bets are off. You can do whatever you want, and because if somebody's stupid enough to pay for it, okay. But come on, that digital figure is certainly better than that, than the Liberace figure. I still don't think it's, I don't think it's fantastic personally. I don't think the head sculpt is that great. I have
problems with all the other Hals, and the problems I have with them outweigh the problems I have with this one.
Oh, I would agree by the even though I thought the one with Dawnbreaker, I thought was better Hal sculpt.
Nah, I don't think so.
But I don't have that either. But the point is that
I have Dawnbreaker by himself, which is good enough for me.
That the reality is when we look at, this has been the benefit of, again, one of the many benefits of the Geoff Johns of the Golden Age, is that we were blessed with so many Green Lantern figures and so many Hal Jordan figures over the last 20 years that it has enabled me to be much more selective in the Hal Jordan figures that I want to buy. And if I look at something and I think it looks like crap just because it's Hal Jordan or just because it's Green Lantern, I'm not going to go out and buy it. And that's why the majority of these Hal Jordan figures have – That's what makes this one. Actually, this one and the vampire one from DC Vampires.
Yeah, vampire.
That Hal Jordan sculpt. I mean, sure, it doesn't look 100% like Hal because he's supposed to be a vampire. But the point is, the sculpt is friggin' fantastic for what it's supposed to be.
Ironically, the best Hals are specifically themed. So it's the vampire one, the Emerald Twilight one, and then the Hal Jordan armor suit one that recently came out.
And to be fair, even the head sculpt on the Zero Hour Parallax is not bad. It's just the fact that they can't get the damn armor right. But if the armor had been comics accurate, well, not just the temples. It's just the fact that if you look at the head sculpt is not on Hal-like. I mean, and yeah, it also helped that they actually gave him brown hair and now black hair. Like somebody should have been kicked in the nuts for that. It's like, how could you at least, you're trying to make Parallax, could you at least give him the right color? And forget about the temples, because technically speaking, which is one of those questions I would love to ask Dan Jurgens, by the way, is that was there a reason in particular in Zero Hour that you didn't give him gray temples? Because he had gray temples in continuity at the time, and now we know as Parallax why he should have had gray temples. There was a reason why he had gray temples, was all because of Parallax. But yet, Zero Hour, he never had gray temples. He was drawn with brown hair the entire time. So I would love to ask him if there was a reason why he did that. Even if the reason was, now he's got all this power, he could de-age himself or whatever. Even with something simple, I would be curious because he deliberately drew him that way. So, but then that's a breath of tangent. But the point is that the head sculpt, even on the crappy Parallax, if they had given him the right color hair, it's not a bad Hal face. It's not a perfect Hal face. But what makes those figures sus is the fact that the armor is just completely wrong. So the glow in the dark is the best of the two.
Yeah.
But it's still not comics accurate.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
LanternCast.com, LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GeoCast. Track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.